Hello and welcome again to Oscar Mike Radio as we count down to number 500. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. Oscar Mike Radio's co-producer, Sinister One Productions. What's your podcast doing? I want to thank my sponsors, Joyce Asak of Asak Real Estate, Echo 6 Ranch, and my supporters, Kason Shaving Company, Exceptional Parent Magazine, and Fight Camp. We are counting down to number 500. It is a full throttle year, and I always love the kind of stories that I get to talk about doing this show. And my next guest, he's got to be a celebrity deep down or a secret agent. I don't know, because he has done so much. I want to welcome my next guest, veteran, author, teacher, multi-level practitioner of many things, PK Edgewater, to Oscar Mike Radio. PK, how are you doing?
Very well. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to talk about your book, Passages, and I'll have the link to that in Oscar Mike Radio show post so people can get it. But you have almost like this, you have to be a secret agent in another life. You had to be.
Well, I'm just curious. I'm not very bright. I've had to pursue a lot of education and experiences to understand the world we live in.
That's a very cool way of putting it. And one of your experiences was serving the military. So let's start there. Where did that military experience come into your life, and what was it like?
So that's a very good question, and I'm fulfilled by my own answer. I have five siblings. I've had five siblings. And when the six of us were growing up, certainly by chance, came along the Vietnam War. And my sister, the oldest sibling, joined the Marine Corps after high school. She and a girlfriend just wanted to have an adventure and get away from working in the cafeteria after school. So they joined the Marine Corps, and the U.S. was involved in Vietnam at that time, you know, on sort of an instructional basis. We weren't involved in the hot war at that time. But then my eldest brother of four brothers got into trouble in high school and at home at age 16, and he dropped out of high school and joined the Navy. And the next three brothers followed him after they graduated from high school and joined the Navy. And it was during those years, during the, you know, early mid 60s up through the early 70s, that the war ramped up. As the casualties mounted, the controversy mounted. And then when I graduated high school, I was recruited to the Air Force Academy by the wrestling coach. And that was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. So I did that. And during my first 2 years of officer training, we withdrew from Vietnam. Very messy withdrawal, as you may be aware.
Yeah.
But so I and my siblings sort of spanned the arc of the Vietnam War, and that brought home to our house a very rich experience for discussion and introspection. And there were some things that came out of those discussions that revealed a particular aspect of the psycho-emotional impact of war on young people that most people may not be aware of, most readers may not be aware of. So I'm hoping that an audience of civilians will take a look at this and learn something. And I think, you know, vets will recognize this readily.
What was your role, function, MOS in the Air Force, PK?
So, I was a cadet. I was, it was military college, frankly. Yeah. And, I was always in a role where, you know, if we talk about deterrence, the officer corps at the academy drilled into us young cadets that even though we weren't in the war, that we affected the war by doing our best, by providing excellence. The world needed to see the quality of the character, intelligence, and effort of their training officer corps. So I lived by that encouragement. I never saw combat myself, as did my four brothers, but I was fascinated by it. And my eldest brother is the single surviving brother. I'm telling you more than I've told anyone else. He's sort of my hero, as big brothers often are. And he's one of those people that's very interesting, a sort of a flawed hero. He's got a hard head, but he's got this intense protective impulse, and it's what makes him special. And I'll be frank, I really wanted to get this novel that draws on his combat experience, some of the skirmishes that he was in, and I wanted to get this out while he's still with us. And I've succeeded with that, and that's very gratifying to me. And I think it's been sort of a reconciliation for him.
So you're a family of six. I'm the eldest of nine, so
Wow.
I get big families. And you're saying that you served, your four brothers served, that's five, and your sister
Sister.
served in the Marine Corps.
Yes.
That's very rare that the whole family served, and especially after the Sullivans in World War II, that the military even allowed that.
Yeah, well, my dad, he tried to enlist three times in the army during World War II and was rejected for medical reasons. So he just kind of had this sense of unfulfilled duty. And he encouraged us all to do our part as best we could, and he would back us up. So the commitment was always there. And so each of us, took our turn. And luckily, we all came home from the
I have to think that watching your sister go through the Marine Corps process also had an effect on you to some degree, right?
Sure. I was the youngest, and every time one of them came home from training or from, being deployed, I was just ecstatic to see them back. They would give me caps to wear with the insignias, and what it's like. You wear a Marine flight cap with the emblem on there. You just, yeah, it was just, yeah. I came up in that household, and I've always felt it as part of my core, and I owe that to my siblings and my father.
You do the Air Force, and not only is there, change in your life, our country's changing, our society's changing. Vietnam still leaves a mark on who we are 50 years later. What was the transition like out of the Air Force into civilian life at that time?
So for me, it was pretty flawless. I went from sort of one educational institution to another, went to medical school, and just moved on. I was really inspired by one professor at the Air Force Academy. He was retired. Well, he wasn't retired. He was an active colonel at that time. He just inspired me in the life sciences. And that in my first year at the academy, I could see my trajectory was being set. So it wasn't difficult for me. It was most difficult for the three oldest brothers. They came back and experienced some ridicule and denigration by the general population. It was visible, and it was, I couldn't figure it out. I mean, the first time I put on the uniform and went into, left base and went into town, I was heckled by my contemporaries. You get called names, and why are you doing this? Yada yada. You're just there to do the job. You have a sense of duty to your country, to your family, to the people around you, and it was hard to understand. But I'd like to reflect on that if you give me a moment.
Sure,
You
yeah.
know, the war concluded 50 years ago, and the decades since the Vietnam conflict have provided a lot of perspective. I mean, most of the survivors of participation in conflict from there are past, but also most of the American public that was alive then have undergone at least major attrition. And in the meantime, there's been a lot of reconciliation and appreciation for Vietnam vets and their sacrifices, rather than blaming the men and women who served in uniform at that time. And this outward expression from a grateful nation in the form of this evocative memorial in the center of Washington, D.C., the Vietnam War Memorial, I call it monumental. That had a big effect on Vietnam veterans' appreciation of themselves. But more importantly, if you can imagine at that time, the Vietnam War was looked at in the context of World War I and World War II, and perhaps Korea, where our returning soldiers were more or less heroes. They were victorious. And, you know, a new world order was being set. And since then, civilians have gotten a better understanding of, you know, many unnecessary wars that are easy to start and get bogged down in without being concluded with definable results. And so the Vietnam War, I think, is being held in a different context. It was that first war that there was so much confusion, so much doubt and controversy over the objectives and the point at which we returned. So I think Vietnam vets and that conflict is held in a different context. And that's valuable to all of us to be able to look at that and learn.
You develop your professional career, you go through a whole lot of discovery and learning in your life. What was it then? What was the catalyst to say, you know what, I'm at this point in my life, I've had all this time to reflect, and I've seen our nation reflect, as you just mentioned, to say, you know what, I want to try to write this book called Passages. Where did that come from, PK?
Well, there's sort of a bifurcated answer to that. I'm an odd duck. You know, I was not a fiction reader through my professional life. If I had time to read, I would be reading technical material, you know, to stay up in my specialty, you know, practice management, global health, political economy. But towards the end of my career, when I was looking at retirement, I reflected on, you know, what made my practice life, my professional life, so rich. And it was the opportunity that I had to observe and walk with so many just ordinary people who were facing incredible challenges, medical challenges, disability. And a lot of them were vets and vets' families. So, I imagined I would try to write in retirement stories about that kind of courage from ordinary people. And since many of my patients were vets and I came from a vet family, I just sort of leaned into my own family's experience with emotional pain, family conflict, depression, suicide. And, you know, to draw people into the story, I used a lot of their combat experience, particularly my eldest brother. So that's where this book originates.
And again, the book is a story of two people, an older Vietnam veteran who's in a hospital, and this whole Greek person who interacts with him, if I have my memory right, which I think I
Yes.
do. And I was very interested. I'm like, okay, I read about you, the author, several different places, but I'm like, why the Greek protagonist? It was, it's very interesting to me that you would go that direction, PK.
So I've been asked, very directly, am I Miko, the psychiatrist in
I
training?
didn't think you
No.
were. I didn't think
Me,
you were.
yeah, Miko is a composite of, doctors I've met in my career from training on, from psychiatrists and psychologists that I've worked with in managing patients. I did create Miko's intern experience from, some of the fluky nights I spent in my internship. Mostly I just applied my own psychology acumen from just career-long experience and continuing education for navigating difficult personalities, drug dependence, people in chronic pain. If you read the book, keep your eye on the ship. And there's sort of a little metaphysical twist that I put into the story that ties the ends together. And you'll understand the answer to that question. I don't want to have too many spoilers.
It's all right. That's all right. It was just an interesting facet of the book. And, I'm like, wait a minute. At first, I'm like, wait a minute. Miko is PK and PK is Miko. But then I'm like, wait a minute. No, that's not it either. There's something else. And I felt like the veteran, on the part I was able to read and then other things, I'm like, this veteran then is either somebody that is close to him, or a composite of veterans he's served through his medical practice throughout the years. And so I'm curious, was I right in my thinking there?
Yes, you're very perceptive. And the other utility of using Miko, a Greek young man in medical training and psychiatry training, is present, one avenue that people might expect conflict from. So, I mean, you picture this, picture the police dragging this aging, drunk Vietnam veteran combat. A combat veteran into this big public hospital for a psychiatric evaluation. And he gets matched up with this young psychiatrist in training from a different country. And some people might expect some friction just from that mashup. But through their encounters, the reader will learn about many of the rites of passage that each of these men, the older one and the younger man, go through before this meeting, this encounter. And they'll also find out other parts of the conflict, why the vet had a single round in the chamber of his weapon when he was arrested. So the two men are meeting at the opposite ends of their lives, so to
Yeah.
speak. There may be some, just reactionary points of conflict between them, but they mesh. And, I've been asked, the story talks about these men at opposite ends of their lives and how each finds awareness of deeper truths. But often people have to interact because they have little alternative. They need something from each other, something of value. So they make it work. And, I think a reader will see that these two men, may not have even be aware at the beginning of the tacit dimensions of their relationship as they unfold. But I think Travis, very well that a life of curiosity will teach you that so many consequential discoveries that you experience come from unlikely sources where you didn't expect it. And to gain from our interactions, we really have to discipline ourselves to listen hard, listen carefully, listen actively, as you understand very well, and turn off that little voice in our head that wants to stick an answer to our question to someone else, stick the answer in our head that we think we already know and are not listening for. So we need to do that because that's where the value comes from, not just the knowledge that you get from someone who's had experiences that you haven't had, but that's where you really connect with the individual is at that level. You have to probe to get there. So I hope I've displayed that in these interactions in the story. And there's time devoted to the wives of these two men, both at different ends of their life. One that's experienced, a lot of stress through this long marriage, and one that's, very early in the marriage, moved to a different country, has to conform to certain, US cultural norms, and she's sort of out of her element. And part of the book is about, I mean, these two wives meet just by chance. And the exchange that they have is the young talking to the mature and the mature talking to the young. And it's a conversation. They each have their own conversations privately. And the conversations that they have with each other, I think, say a lot about behavior. In the novel, I use all these mechanics of war, of returning home as a vet, that experience, and what it's like to, become the spouse of someone in that situation or in medical training. It's not easy. I think the depictions have something for every reader. I think most readers will identify with one or more of the characters, with one or more of their experiences, with one or more of their thought processes, with one or more of their defense mechanisms. So it's kind of packed with a lot. So I'm hoping that people will not just see passages of Voyage from War to Peace as a war story. It's intended to be so much more than that. The lessons about trauma and healing, extend beyond veterans and their families. It is a value to vets, obviously, and their families, beyond the Vietnam War, any generation, any conflict. But it also applies to the broader population beyond military families, people who have been impacted by domestic or sexual violence, by chronic diseases and encountering disabilities, displacement, migration, experiencing homelessness. In my retirement, I'm volunteering to provide medical care at a shelter for those experiencing homelessness. It's like a foreign country. The things that you encounter that are out of what we experience as norm or normative, and it's really traumatic. So the messages should be conveyed to those populations as well.
Miko is a psychiatrist, and a lot of times veterans will tell me, I don't like talking to civilian psychiatrists or psychologists because they don't know what I'm going through. Was one of the aims of Passages a way to show a veteran that there is commonality, there is a bridge between their experience and what the care provider is trying to do for them?
Yes, I think there's a lot of value.
Okay.
I'm so astounded by your perception. Miko, as the psychiatrist in training, has to reveal to this hardened vet that he has no personal military experience. And, he's not American. He's not an American citizen. And he was born way after the Vietnam conflict. So he just opens up and says, I'm a blank slate. I see you as a person. I don't see you in any other context. I have no basis to make judgments of you except for your good. That's a helpful mechanism in the book to just lay it open, no judgment. Let's just talk. Let's get to what's driving your anxiety, your anger, your substance abuse. Let's just get to it without any precautions. So thank you for asking that question. I think readers need to understand that point of view.
So another question, kind of more personal. You've spent the majority of your career, military and otherwise, healing people. And in fact, in retirement, you still have this desire to serve, to heal. What part of this book are you trying to heal? What I mean is, you wrote this book, and I think, I've understood listening to you that it was part for your family's experience, part for the veteran, what we just talked about. But what part of you did this book heal, if I can phrase it that way, PK?
That's a very intimate question. I
You don't have
my
to answer it.
answer is I will answer it. I think I mentioned before that I held my siblings in high regard. And particularly my eldest brother was sort of my hero. And I watched him at good times, at strong times, and I watched him when he was really off the rails. And as he aged and mellowed, and I did some of the same, and we were losing some of our siblings, I really wanted to get to know him. I wanted to resolve in my mind, in my heart, how in one person there can be such qualities, such richness of sense of duty, sense of protectiveness, of sense of doing the job right consistently, sense of leadership. He has all those qualities, and yet, you pour a little fuel into him and things just go off the rails. And he's the type of guy that with those qualities comes this other side of the coin where, sometimes he sees things in black and white. And in his dealings with people, it's black and white. You're either this or you're that. You're either doing or you're out. In my profession, you have to see people in all gradations. You have to see people on all kinds of spectrums. That they're strong at this, they're not so strong at this. How do you amplify their strengths and protect them from their weaknesses? So, I love my brother and I just wanted to understand him better. And I've learned a lot. And we still remain tight as thieves.
It's very interesting to me because when I think about it and the people I've talked to over this amount of time, I've talked to a lot of veterans who write about their experience. I've talked to wives who didn't know about their husband's service and learned about that and wanted to do that. But I've never really talked to a sibling trying to use a book to honor and show connection with another sibling who you both served in the military. It's very unique. And again, I go back to, I got to tell you honestly, I read a whole lot about the Sullivans in World War II who all got killed at the same time, and major policy was changed since then. I'm still surprised. I shouldn't be, but it's still surprising to me that they allowed all of you, your sister included, to kind of serve in the same time frame.
So we served in the same time frame. The one unique step was Two of my siblings were twins.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and they were, of course, so close to each other. you can imagine. But, they deployed first on two different destroyers, and they requisitioned to, get together on the same destroyer. And the law had been changed, the regs had been changed to allow that only with the sailors' consent and with their parents' consent. And my parents, they knew the nature of the twins' relationship, so they signed affirmatively.
Just lighten up a little bit. Did your sister ever lord it over you all that she was a Marine and you all weren't? I'm a Marine veteran myself, so I have to. That had to be some really interesting conversation come November 10th and 11th for Veterans Day. Had to be.
yeah, she wouldn't let down her guard, of course, but she was the oldest, and she was a sister, and she sort of second mothered all of us,
I'm sure.
so she didn't, she would hold her own, but she wasn't, divisive about it at all.
Well, it's just the Marine Corps' 250th birthday last year and, all that good stuff. So I just was curious about that because I can't imagine having an older sister who was a Marine.
She was pretty cool. She is pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A savage. People read books every day, and sometimes books collect us, sometimes books don't. And going on YouTube and looking at some of the people's reactions to your book, it became evident that this book left something different with them. And I'm curious, as you put this book out there and talk to more people about it and they read it, do you feel that you accomplished the mission that you had? Not mission, but the passion it took to write this book. Do you feel like you're getting some validation? Like people are seeing what you want them to see?
Yes, to a very great degree. I got this book and I fulfilled my intentions, and I was really pleasantly surprised to see some of the reviews, and not only from Kirkus and Publishers Weekly and Literary Titan, very, very favorable reviews, but just from readers. And it's kind of across the spectrum. Tell you the first thing that surprised me were readers that were pretty obviously young women who had no experience with being in the military or about the military. And it was so common to hear that this was not my genre, this is not what I usually read, but I picked it up and just couldn't put it down because it showed me so many things that I've wondered about but didn't understand. And that's very gratifying. At least one, I think two clinical psychologists commented that, yeah, this is the way therapy should proceed. And yeah, it's been really gratifying. And I hope more people will read it. I think it's a good story. And that's why I'm talking to you. That's why I'm trying to continue to promote the novel. Not that it's, earth-shaking, but I think many people will enjoy just the reflection that it will trigger in their own lives, and the reflection on some of their passages from one stage of their life to the next, from one level of maturity to the next, from one level of harm and feeling aggrieved and getting past it. So I think it can be valuable. It's not for everybody. I think there have been a few reviewers who just looked at the military part and say, ah, what's the rest of this fluff? I love the combat stories. But the combat stories are what they are, and they're interesting, but they're the foundation that the rest of the story is built on, and that's a story, a multifaceted story of healing hopefully.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that I really kind of drew me into talking with you is there is the combat aspect of it, but that's just one part of the sandwich. It's the relationship these two men develop and their wives, and again, you could have two different ends of their life, one starting out, one's coming to the end, invariably. And so I think that really resonated with me. I have to ask, a lot of people write a book and then they're like, no, they're one and done. But some people, once they do this, do it again. Do you have any other book projects planned or you're working on right now, PK?
I have several ideas.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, before I wrote Passages, I actually wrote a manuscript of another novel, different setting, but still, pretty deeply human with other types of interpersonal conflict. But it's so rough that I had to put it aside because I really wanted to get to this novel. And I'll go back to that. But there are other very interesting circumstances, some of them national and some of them transnational. Characters that I've found in my life that are very interesting and fodder for this type of novel. If people want me to compare this to some novel, I think of Richard Rousseau in a novel called Nobody's Fool, and it was made into a movie. It's so layered. You have to read the book or watch the movie several times to get all of it out. It's one of those movies that each time you see it, you pick up more from it. And then there's something recent, Claire Keegan's novels called Small Things Like These. It's a very subtle story about a man who, had a rough childhood. Became very conventional in his professional life, supplying coal to households. And then later in his life, it all comes back to him, and he feels this strong impulse to do the right thing in the milieu of people doing the wrong thing. And it's very powerful, evocative. So those are kind of the models that I like to work from is just moving people from to get out of their heads and think about doing the right thing and moving in the right direction. There are positive ways, and there are examples about them that you can read in novels. I mean, you don't have to go to how-to books. Lots of people write meaningful stories that lessons and options for behavior are illustrated. And I hope this story is one of them. That's the type I'd like to move on to.
Talking with you, there's this real desire to connect humans with other humans through your writing art. And in this age of TikTok, social media, and 3-second videos, you still find the book, you still find the story, and that human side of it's still very powerful, Doctor. What's that mean to you with all this technology around us that it's still one person going through their journey with other people helping them out that make it so powerful?
Despite all the technology, our health is primarily maintained by our relations with other humans. That's indisputable. All the research points to the more we get away from each other, the worse off we are in so many ways. The more we aggregate, stay close, touch, talk, relate, that's where good health comes from and is sustained. It's indisputable. You can look at all, and I've been asked, Kirkus says this is philosophical and deeply human. What does that mean? Well, philosophical philosophy is the love of knowledge and seeking understanding, and any deeply held conviction without hard evidence is philosophical. Really, any notion that provokes one to ponder is which this book will is descriptively philosophical. Deeply human refers to what humans do best of all forms of life, and that is self-awareness. Self-awareness, introspection. And the emotional component that we put into our decision making. So the electronics are nice. They serve huge purpose in improving the quality of our life, but it can be a drag on what's at our core. And I think people know that at their core and are trying to work back to that. And I think we'll succeed.
Awesome conversation. I love having these where we really get into the not the mechanics, but how all this is put together for a story and what you want people to get out of it. How can people find your book? Do you have like, can they order like signed copies? How could we support you?
Thanks so much. The book is printed by Ingram Spark for libraries and bookstores. You can ask your bookstore to get it if you have a favorite place to go. It is on Amazon, the big marketplace, so it's easily accessed there in print form and Kindle form. So, and I'd be happy to sign a book for anyone.
Well, again, PK, this is the best part about doing this show, even after all this time, is there's always a different veteran experience. There's always a different angle or a different way somebody went through their journey. And, to think about, there's been books written about brotherhood and songs and, what the Bible mentions about brotherhood. I have to think your brother's very proud of what you've done.
Well, thank you. I hope so. And I'm curious about you. You were a Marine, and I know what that means. Where did the impulse to dig in like this in other people's lives and try to improve them, where did that come from? Was that before the Marine Corps, during the Marine Corps, since? You're truly talented in what you do.
I don't know, and it's funny now. I'm the host, and you're the guest. It's not supposed to work this
I
way,
want to
but
know.
we'll play along because this has been a very powerful conversation. So I think it's something that's just in my fabric, and I'll tell you why. Way back in the day, I did a little newsletter for my youth group for church, and it was very interesting to me to talk with people and understand, what the story was.
How old were you then?
I was like between 11 and 14 years old, and it was an
Wow.
old dot matrix printer, and it's called the Bible Bugle. And we do little stories about the youth group or whatever. But I found, and I didn't have I don't have the academic pedigree that you do, P. Gray, but I found that people interest me greatly. It's, and I found that, if you can understand how people work, their motivations, what and why they do, you can get a pretty good idea of where things fit in. And a lot of that comes from, just being able to listen. And so almost 10 years ago, 10 years ago during this time, to be candid with you, I was going through a very difficult time in my life, and I was really struggling. And weird thing happened. I was doing guest hosting at a radio station called WVBF. It's an AM station in Taunton, Massachusetts. And these guys would have me come down and guest host when there was a veteran on. And I found out, kind of like they found out, and you found out that, Travis can ask some pretty decent questions. I'm like, I'm just sitting there listening, and I asked something that interests me. And so I started this show to, give veterans hope. I'm a life member of the Marine Corps League, and during that time is when the 22 a day would really get going. And we would bury people who'd committed suicide. And I'm like, to your point, and this is something that I need to tell you, you're absolutely right on. The VA has confirmed once a person starts isolating themselves from a community, tribe, family, whatever. That's really the first true indicator that we have a problem here, and that they're going down a bad road. And that's when you need to bring them back. Not when they start self-isolating is when that call for help needs to go up, right? And so I want to provide some way, somehow, where if I told a veteran story or talked about some of the things that I had been through, that maybe there's some other veteran out there that might walk away from that abyss. Because at that time, I can tell you candidly that,
It's a
I looked
virtual
in,
certainty.
I stared in the abyss several times. This empty blackness. I knew where the ledge was absolutely several times. I didn't do it. I don't
I
think I
call
did.
it the vortex, and you know the vortex.
And what happened was I started doing this show, and the first 30, 40 episodes were terrible. But what started
I
happening
doubt that.
was I started enjoying this process, much like your writing process of sitting down with a complete stranger, meeting them where they are, and trying to draw out something that their family didn't know, they didn't know, whatever, and seeing if people could benefit from that. And I just think over time, the show has allowed me to hone that. And you're not the first person who's told me, Travis, you got a real skill here. I'm like, no, I'm just talk to people and just have a good time doing it. They're like, no, it's a skill. And maybe this is what resonated with you. I don't know, but this is where it comes from.
Thank you. I salute you not just for your service to our country, but I salute you for taking action as the natural facilitator you are of relationships and understanding. So you're one of these blessed people who has found yourself exactly where you should be and need to be. So good for you, Travis.
Well, thank you very much. I'd like to have you back on and talk about your karate work. And again, ladies and gentlemen, he's got to be a secret agent. And look at that hair. I mean, I am mad jealous, PK. I can't do that ever again in my
I
life. I
can't look
mean,
tough like this.
you look like you're sipping, a martini in the casino, waiting for your double agent to come in.
Well, you can fool some of the people some of the time, you know?
This interaction we just had, you and I, is one of the things that fuels the continuation of this show. So I want to thank you for sharing so candidly. This is, one of these great conversations. I'm going to remember this for a long time. What a great way to start my 2026. And I'm honored that you're part of my countdown for 500. It's very meaningful. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a privilege. I really appreciate this talk we've had. It's
Absolutely.
meaningful.
We'll do it again.
All right.
Ladies and
Sounds good.
gentlemen, PK Edgewater, author of Passages. I'll have the links to his book and Oscar Mike Radio show post. Go out and get it. We're going to have him back on. And again, every veteran has a different story, and I'm glad he told us his story. I'm Travis Parrington, Oscar Mike Radio. We're Mission in Flight, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.
Every generation, every sacrifice, our nation's service members have stood up for our freedom, our families, and our future. Now it's our turn to stand up for them. This year, you can honor their service in a deeply personal way by sponsoring a $17 Veterans Wreath. Each wreath is more than a symbol. It's a heartfelt tribute to the heroes who served and to the families who carry their legacy. Visit wreathsacrossamerica.org to sponsor a wreath today. This isn't just a wreath. It's a personal gift to an American hero.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio, where our active duty service members and veterans are in action and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Coast Sinister One production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.